settings. Good morning, everyone. It is 10:03 on, I always forget to look what date we're on, July 25th, 2017. July 26th, 2017. I call this regular scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. I'm Randy Christman, chairman, joined by Commissioner Brian Crashus and Commissioner Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. For opening comments, I will just say that I was to my first meeting of the Southwest Power Pool since taking on that responsibility. The previous one, since we divided those responsibilities, I was unable to attend. It was right nearing the end of the legislative session. North Dakota got into the Southwest Power Pool by virtue of Basin Electric going that direction. And the power pool consists now of the Dakotas and Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Missouri, Iowa, Arkansas, and New Mexico, those 10 states, and looking at a potential expansion to Colorado and Wyoming and maybe Montana. So it was quite an interesting meeting. There are some similarities as well as some differences between SPP and MISO, and really appreciated Victor's participation. Each state, you know, has a staff person working on these things, and his knowledge and the warm welcome and the respect that he got when he came into the room from not only the other staff people but the other commissioners. So I think North Dakota's off to a good start on being part of the Southwest Power Pool. There's some things that concern or bother me and some things that I think are very good about the organization, but we'll continue working on it. Commissioner Crashus?
Oh, good morning. It has been been a very busy 2-3 weeks been covering a lot of ground. Was in San Diego for a convention, and that was a great experience. Was able to meet and network with a number of people. So that took place. Also, we had the OASIS hearing for the gas plant expansion project, which I know we'll talk more about. And then we also had the last couple of days. Yesterday was in Tioga, and Monday we were in Minot. So it's been a bit of a blur, but we've been covering a lot of ground, and it was really good. I thought both hearings were excellent in the sense that we had good participation from the public, and you know, they do a great job of expressing their concerns. It's good to have everyone in the same room and to talk about the issues that are important to them, particularly from a landowner perspective when you're talking the private population. So it was beneficial to have that background information and will be very useful going forward. I know we have a busy agenda ahead, so I will leave it at that and turn it over to Commissioner Fedorchak.
Well, good morning, everyone. Just piggyback a little bit off of Commissioner Crashus's comments. We had our hearings yesterday on the Senex pipeline, which is a significant amount of new infrastructure going into North Dakota to provide more supply for a resource that all of us depend on, which is gasoline and diesel fuels for our economy. The hearings were very productive. There were no protesters. There was good input from the public. A lot of landowners showed up and to listen largely, but also to share their comments and concerns about how the infrastructure impacts them. And it was interesting to have those hearings right at the piggybacking after the NARUC meetings that Commissioner Crash has talked about, because a lot of the discussion in NARUC was about infrastructure. Well, renewables, the new way of generating electricity in the country, and the meeting was in California, and California is very proactive on the renewable scene. And I'm on the gas committee, and so we talk about a lot on the gas committee having the natural gas to back up the renewables and the whole switch that's taking place nationally to support that. And really, I think there's some hard conversations our country needs to face In the development of renewables and the reality of having some fossil fuels to back those renewables up, it's absolutely essential. But in large portions of the country, you cannot build a pipeline. The northeast part of the country, you absolutely cannot build a pipeline. So how are you going to have the penetration of renewables that large segments of the population want without having some infrastructure in place to back it up? Those are the realities that we're going to be dealing with. And then to come home and have these hearings here where we have a very sensible process laid out where the public comes, they listen, they interact with us. It's just, it's really gratifying to be in North Dakota where you can do that sort of thing. And really, I love the hearings because it does give us a chance to listen and to hear from the public about what their concerns are. And when you do that and when you start laying them out and you have the company there, you can really find a path forward to meeting everybody's needs. And so it's, I think North Dakota has a lot to teach other areas, and I think the more the public participates in what we do, the more I think they realize, like, this can be done. We can have a good infrastructure. We can site it in a way that minimizes impact to the environment, and we can site it in a way that takes into consideration the concerns of the people who have to live with it. And so it's a good productive hearings. And I want to also say it's great having Commissioner Crosius on board. His perspectives as a business person and a landowner and a rancher and all these sorts of things really comes to light in the hearings and the questions that he asks and the perspectives that he offers and his common sense. And so you're a great addition to the team, and it's good to have you on board.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move into the consent calendar. There are 11 consent items plus the previous minutes, and I move passage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. To the regular agenda, RC1, I move the commission acknowledge Otter Creek Mining Company, LLC's request to withdraw its application for surface coal mining permit NAOC-0802 and close the case in Otter Creek Mining Company LLC permit NAOC-0802 approval case number RC-08-940.
Second.
In a letter dated July 13th of this year, North American Coal's Otter Creek Mining Company formally withdrew their application for a mining permit. North American Coal submitted the application on December 23rd of 2008, so getting not far from a decade ago. The permit application was deemed complete on April 19th of 2012. But there's been no activity on the permit application from 2012 until 2017. The proposed permit area consisted of about 5,500 acres. It was located 4 miles northwest of Center, North Dakota, but a customer had not been identified, and thus the request to withdraw the application.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC2, I move the commission approve revision number 29 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK-9503 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to revise the post-mining topography, modify the mining and reclamation plans and schedules to include a mining pit cessation in Section 28 of Township 145 North, Range 85 West in McLean County. This revision also updates the consolidated worst-case reclamation cost estimate using updated variable costs.
Second.
On February 21st of this year, the Falkirk Mining Company filed the application for this revision number 29, and in the next case, it'll have to do with a renewal, and they sound so similar, so I just want to emphasize this is a revision. And this is to update the post-mining topography and to modify the mining and reclamation plans in McLean County. This revision also updates the reclamation cost estimate. This revision proposes a temporary mining pit cessation, approximately 40 acres in size. The mining cessation is necessary in order to delay the closure of County Road 17 up there in McLean County on the west side of the cessation area and to reopen County Road 20 on the north side. In proposing this cessation area, consideration was given to landowner access and public travel in the area of the Falkirk mine, along with improved mining and reclamation efficiencies. The cessation plan includes safety features such as fencing, setback distance, and a 6-foot-high berm to prohibit accidental vehicle entry into the mine area. Prior to relocating or closing County Road 17, Falkirk will have to obtain approval from McLean County and file another revision to the mining permit. Falkirk has submitted the affidavits of publication for the newspaper notice advertising the application for this revision. We notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no comments or objections to the revision application. The worst-case reclamation bond costs were updated with this revision, but no bond adjustments were necessary as a result of this revision. Surety, self, and collateral bonds that total $88.7 million cover this and two other permits at the Falkirk mine. So the Reclamation Division has completed its review of the application and recommends it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the commission approve renewal number 6 for surface coal mining permit number NACT-8601 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to extend the permit term for another 5 years until July 28, 2022.
Second.
Again, this is a renewal as opposed to the previous revision, and this is for Coteau Properties, which is up north of the Beulah Hazen area. On March 27th, Coteau Properties filed the application for renewal number 6 to continue to conduct mining operations within the existing permit area until July 28th of 2022. Permit 8601 covers portions of two sections in Mercer County, totaling about 772.5 acres. Coal removal has been completed from this permit area, but portions of the permit are being used to support mining in other permit areas at the Freedom Mine. This includes a subsoil storage area and an equipment access road. Coteau submitted the affidavits of publication of the newspaper notice. We notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no objections to the application. Self and collateral bonds that total $146 million cover this and the other permits at the Freedom Mine. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this 5-year renewal and respectfully recommends that it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the commission issue the order granting request to discontinue business in Minn Kota Ag Products Incorporated, facility-based grain buyer, Barney, North Dakota. Discontinue business, case number GE-17-288.
Second.
We received a request from Minn Kota to discontinue licensing its facility in Barney. Minn Kota notified staff that the facility has been sold to farmers for their personal use. The facility is empty and there are no unpaid scale tickets or open contracts, so staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will just say Barney, for those who aren't familiar, is about 20 miles west of Wahpeton, and if you're in need of refreshments or a good meal, DJ's Bar and Grill is a great place to stop.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC5, I move the commission issue the order granting request to discontinue business in Hinrichs Trading LLC, roving grain buyer, Pullman, Washington, discontinue case number GE-17-289. I'm sorry, discontinue business case number GE-17-289.
Second.
On July 18th, we received a request to discontinue business from Hinrichs Trading. Hinrichs will no longer be operating as a roving grain buyer under North Dakota roving grain buyer license number 3130. There are no unpaid scale tickets or open contracts. Staff recommends the request be approved. I'll just point out that we get more of these discontinue business applications this time of year because license renewals are occurring in July typically, and so some of these may have made their decision to discontinue business anytime throughout the past year but just never really notified us until they got the renewal application. So that's why we're getting multiples of these kinds of cases.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? I see none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC6, I move the commission issue the order granting request to discontinue business in Twin Rivers Grain LLC, roving grain buyer, Sartell, Minnesota, discontinue business case number GE-17-290.
Second.
On July 13th, we received the request to discontinue business from Twin Rivers Grain. Twin Rivers will no longer be operating as a roving grain buyer under North Dakota grain buyer license number 3222. There are no unpaid scale tickets or open contracts, so staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And RC7, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order issue in certificate of site compatibility number 52 in Oasis Midstream Services LLC Wild Basin Gas Plant, McKenzie County siting application case number PU-17-181.
Second.
On May 4th, of this year, Oasis Midstream Services LLC filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of an addition to its existing Wild Basin gas plant located in McKenzie County. We held a hearing on July 14th in Watford City. Little background and things we learned at the hearing. Or before the hearing in some of the cases. Oasis is a Delaware LLC authorized to do business in the state of North Dakota since May 2nd of 2013. They own and operate the Wild Basin Gas Plant and Crude Handling Facility, which is located approximately 6 miles northeast of Watford City. The plant is capable of processing 80 million cubic feet per day of gas and stabilizing up to 60,000 barrels of crude oil per day. Oasis plans to increase the capacity of the plant to process 280 million cubic feet per day of gas and stabilize up to 80,000 barrels of crude oil per day, and to add an additional 150,000 barrel crude oil storage tank to accommodate additional oil gathering efforts. And so I want to emphasize they're going from 80 million cubic feet a day of gas to 280, so an increase of 200, and from 60,000 barrels of crude per day stabilized to 80,000, so an increase of 20. So just to clarify those numbers. The plant uses mechanical refrigeration units to liquefy natural gas for storage and truck offload capabilities. The modular mechanical refrigeration units will be increased by 65,000 million cubic feet per day. So the total cost of increasing the plant capacity is estimated to be $150 million. This plant processes wellhead-associated natural gas from oil production wells connected to Oasis's gathering system in the Wild Basin area. Natural gas liquids are stored and delivered to outside facilities. A residue gas is delivered to a pipeline owned and operated by Northern Border Pipeline Company. Oasis conducted a Class 1 cultural resource literature search and a Class 3 cultural resource inventory. Agencies contacted by Oasis and providing comments include the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, North Dakota Game and Fish, North Dakota Parks and Rec, North Dakota State Historical Preservation Office, North Dakota Department of Trust Lands, the North Dakota State Water Commission, the Western Area Water Supply, the McKenzie County Water Resource Board, and the McKenzie County Weed Board. The State Water Commission referenced the potential requirement for a water permit if there is a diversion of water, surface water or groundwater. And Oasis does not expect an impact on surface drainage, as much of these facilities do not require a significant amount of concrete, which will leave the soils below gravel surfaces for moisture absorption. Oasis testified that it has received a conditional use permit from McKenzie County for the plant. The North Dakota Department of Health provided comments stating that an air pollution control permit would be needed to construct and operate the expansion. So that is something I want to emphasize. That is something that they will need to get yet. There's no evidence of any other agency responses expressing any concerns on the company's proposal. They evaluated the expansion project with respect to the excludence, avoidance, selection, and policy criteria of our Public Service Commission. The existing plant and the proposed expansion plant areas are not within an exclusion area nor within any avoidance area. The additional processing capacity and crude handling facilities will minimize environmental disturbance by utilizing existing infrastructure, including utilities, gathering systems, delivery pipelines, and access roads. For the existing plant, Oasis paved the county road into there for dust control already in the past. McKenzie County Electric is aware that this increased load is coming. The substation already on site will be adequate for the increased load. Oasis will coordinate with local authorities and emergency managers regarding their emergency response measures. They will continue to work with the State Water Commission to address whether or not there will be a need for any water permits for the plant, but again, they are very confident that won't be necessary. There are no trees or shrubs existing in the expansion area, so there's no concerns there. Oasis currently uses a supervisory control and data acquisition system, typically referred to as SCADA, to monitor the operations, and will do the same with the expansion. They filed a 3-year weed control plan with McKenzie County that will minimize weed propagation. And Oasis will be providing the commission with copies of its air permits as soon as they are received from the State Department of Health. I will say that I went into this thing looking at this plant as seemed like kind of a simple and exciting application, and there was one haunting question in my mind that, depending on the answer, would potentially very much upset me. And I was almost reluctant to ask the question because you hate to see what looks like a good plan fall off the radar because of something bad about it. And here was my concern. They just built the existing plant, and it was under the threshold for the Public Service Commission siting authority, and now they're in with this application for this big expansion. And I had concerns that this was an effort to avert our siting authority by building something there, and then, well, now it's just an addition once it gets to an actual siting case. But when I asked the question, they had, I was relieved to say, a very reasoned explanation. When they plan, you know, these gas plants can be planned and developed and constructed very quickly, regardless whether it meets our threshold, our jurisdictional threshold or not. When they planned the existing plant, when they started planning, it was 2014, everything was different in the Bakken at that time. And they anticipated need of about the 80,000 barrel level. And by the time that was planned out and constructed, it finished construction in 2016, and by then the world was really changing up there. A lot of things had slowed down, but not in that Wild Basin area. That is really that core area kind of in there east of Watford City, where additional drilling and fracking and expansion has continued to occur. And it's also the area where, as they drill out additional oil wells, those are the wells that have the highest gas production. So by the end of last year, about the time this existing plant was coming online, they could see that the amount of gas being produced in their region had exploded, and they began planning for this large one, turned in the application last spring, hope to start constructing here yet this fall and be online by next year sometime to handle this explosion of gas processing that's occurring. This gas is a byproduct of the oil industry. It will either be wasted by flaring it into the atmosphere, or it will be processed into a usable value-added product. This processing plant is one of the biggest steps ever taken in North Dakota to decrease flaring and increase revenues for mineral owners, for producers, and for taxing authorities. So I definitely intend to vote for this project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, during the course of the hearing, you look at the positive aspects of any project, and then you weigh them out with, are the requirements being met? This is using Bakken natural gas, and it's a value added energy project, which is great to see. Whenever that type of infrastructure is built out in North Dakota. And that equates to jobs. It helps drive our economy. It helps sustain the oil and gas industry in North Dakota. One thing that I also had a question of during the hearing, and it goes to the thresholds. When you're looking at the thresholds on any given project, and when the initial phase of a plant, if you want to call it the initial phase, had just been built, you do have to ask the question, well, is this a means of getting under the threshold limit, having the infrastructure in place, and then having it making it more difficult to as a commission, to say, well, it's in place, so things are already, you know, mostly there, if you will, and it becomes expansion. I really looked at this as in totality, in terms of both the initial plant that had already been built, because we're talking just within the past year, and then I also looked at the expansion portion and really put it together in terms of how I viewed it. I think it does raise a few questions in terms of the thresholds, in terms of siting standards. And that's something that I would advocate reviewing in terms of, are they set too high? Because in this instance, I think it wasn't anticipated in terms of how much natural gas would be coming online. And I think Oasis made a very good case, and as Commissioner Christman indicated, explained it very well during the course of the hearing. But as a regulator, you do have to ask that question. You can't just ignore it, and companies, on the other hand, can't expect a project like this to be rubber stamped either, because it's expansion versus something that would have been over the threshold to begin with. So I took a very critical view of that to ensure that I had the level of confidence that it wasn't a workaround of the process. And my takeaway was that it is not. But I think it's a message that needs to go out to all companies, that coming in with a phase one and phase two approach, if you will, or multiple phase approach might be a better way of putting it, in effect becomes an effective workaround from what we as regulators need to do. So in this instance, I also am favorable toward the project. And again, it's anytime we can add value to any of our industries, whether it's agriculture, energy, or other sectors, that's a good thing for the state. So we've got some more work to do on this, but at this point in time, I thought it was a good hearing and appreciated the comments made by everyone during the course of that hearing.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Crashes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Commission approve the tariffs filed June 26, 2017 and July 14, 2017 to comply with the Commission's June 16, 2017 finding of fact, conclusions of law and order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, 2016 electric rate increase, application case number PU-16-666.
Second.
On June 26, 2017, MDU, our Montana Dakota Utilities Company, filed electric service tariffs and supporting work papers in compliance with the Commission's order dated June 16, 2017. On July 14, 2017, MDU filed revised electric service tariffs to update several tariff sheets per advocacy staff's request. Staff has reviewed the filings to ensure the new tariffs will increase revenues by $7.5 million as ordered by the Commission, and that changes in the tariff language are reasonable and appropriate. Staff believes that MDU's filing complies with the Commission's order and recommends approval of the tariffs on the July 26, 2017 agenda, with final rates to be effective August 7th, 2017. And in effect, after the rate case, MDU updated their tariffs and rate schedules. And while we don't have, I'm skipping ahead. Nope, that would be it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, I move the Commission approve the interim rate refund plan filed June 14th, 2017 to comply with the Commission's June 16th, 2017 findings of fact, conclusion of law and order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Incorporated, 2016 electric rate increase, application number PU-16-666.
Second.
Okay, on July 14th, 2017, MDU filed a proposed interim rate refund plan in compliance with the Commission's order dated June 16th, 2017. Staff has reviewed the filing and believes it complies with the terms of the settlement agreement and the Commission's order. Staff recommends approval of the proposed interim rate refund plan on the June 26th, 2017 agenda, where we are at today, with final customer refund amounts to be calculated using amounts calculated through actual date the interim rate is stopped and final rates begin. Just as a refresher, again, the settlement was for $7.5 million. And during the course of working with staff approved a interim rate amount approximately $10 million in terms of total revenue collected, and that again was on an interim basis. And that was in place and has continued to be in place and will be through August 6th. So the interim rates will be collected until August 6th. The final rates will take effect August 7th, and then the final amounts will be calculated. On a per-customer basis, it's approximately $5.23, and that would equate to $418,000 across residential rate payers. So it's an approximate amount. It should, I would assume, be fairly close to that amount. And once we turn the corner on August 6th, get into August 7th, then the final calculations will be provided.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just to add to what Commissioner Crossers has said, this is now customers are going to begin seeing the results of the rate case reflected in their bills. So there will be a refund from an overcalculation on or overcollection on the interim rates, followed by a rate increase in the other sets. So there will be a wash of those two amounts. And I think in total, what's the anticipated on the average customer? Is it still a decrease over what they're currently paying? Once you take the interim refund off and the new collection on?
No, I think it's a slight increase.
Slight increase, but it's a pretty small increase over what they're currently paying. So after all those months of work, here we go. Customers will see it in their bills starting next month.
And one thing I did fail to mention, the starting point was $13.4 million. Then staff worked with and interveners worked with MDU to come in at the $10 million interim amount, and then it landed at $7.5 million. So just to clarify, the starting point was $13.4 million.
And it is especially noteworthy when we're all in places like California and talking to people about the electric rates that are being paid in other parts of the country. Even with increases like this and significant investments that our companies are making to refresh their fleet and refresh their transmission infrastructure and comply with environmental guidelines, we still have among the lowest rates in the nation and the highest reliability in the nation as well. So customers are getting good value from their utilities in North Dakota.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in Otter Tail Power Company, Minn Kota Ag Products Incorporated, Richland County, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU-17-96.
Second.
Okay, public hearing on case number PU-16-96 will begin Monday, October 23rd, 2017. That will occur at 8:30 Central Daylight Time in the Commission Hearing Room here on the 12th floor of the State Capitol. So that's worth noting. And on February 27th, when this began, 2017, Otter Tail Power Company filed an application to extend electric service to Minn Kota Ag Products Incorporated at a location in the northeast quarter of Section 10, Township 132 North, Range 50 West in Richland County. And on March 31st, 2017, a protest and request for hearing was received from Dakota Valley Electric Cooperative Incorporated. Issues that we will consider in these matters include customer preference in terms of who supplies the electric service to them, what electric suppliers are operating in the general area, electric supply lines that exist within at least a 2-mile radius of the area, what customers are being served by electric suppliers within that 2-mile radius, differences, if any, between the electrical suppliers available to serve the area, and that's with respect to reliability of service, which will be able to serve the location in question more economically is one of the determining factors, and still allow them to earn an adequate return on investment. Which suppliers extended electric service would be best in order to support orderly and economic development of electric service in the general area. We look at wasteful duplication if that should occur. We also look at another issue to be considered. Is it probable that the location in question will be included within the corporate limits of a municipality within the foreseeable future and will service by either of the electric suppliers in the area unreasonably interfere with the system or systems service or system of the other? So again, we have a public hearing on this case. Will be on October 23rd. We will hear from both parties. We will take everything into account as mentioned and make a decision on which will supply power to Mid-Dakota Ag Products Incorporated.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'll just make note that it's interesting that we have this notice of hearing on a dispute of a service area in a service area on the same day that we have four informal hearings scheduled to discuss service area agreements for Beulah, Bellefield, Hazen, and South Hart. So obviously those service area agreements where the utilities involved work out who's going to serve where, that's the best, most productive way forward. Sometimes that can happen, and it results in a situation like this where both of them want a customer and they can't come to terms with it, and so they come to us and we have to look at all those factors and make a decision on who gets to serve that customer. So it's a pretty proven process. It's time-consuming, and it's challenging for us, but we've got good factors to consider, and we'll work through it.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission close Otter Tail Power Company 2016 Electric Annual Report, case number PU-17-183.
Second.
Okay, just as a matter of some background information, Otter Tail Power Company provides electric service to about 58,609 customers in North Dakota. And staff has reviewed the company's annual report filing for 2016, and that is a time-consuming procedure that they do a very good job with. The company's return on equity was 9.95% in 2016. The commission authorized a rate of return of 10.75% in the most recent case, PU-08-862. With that in mind, the company under-earned by about $2.3 million in 2016. And when considering the impact of weather, because you have to take that into account, the rate of return would have actually been 10.92% and would have resulted in an over-earning of $540,000 if it were a normal year in terms of weather. When considering the weather impacts to earnings and the relatively low value of under-earning, staff sees no further reason to investigate any further and recommends that the commission close the above-captioned case. And again, just to dovetail on a comment Commissioner Fedorichek made, and it's just a great point. We do have some of the lowest electrical rates in the company in the country, and in I believe it was 2015. I haven't seen the 2016 numbers yet, but we were ranked third lowest in terms of cost to consumers, which is very advantageous for people living in the state of North Dakota. And Otter Tail has traditionally had some of the most competitive rates out there as well. They do a good job helping serve our customers.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just to further elaborate it, Otter Tail hasn't been in for a general rate increase for a number of years, and so their authorized return on equity is higher than what we've been approving recently, and probably a reflection of what interest rates were more back in the day that they had their last rate case. But they have, of the three regulated utilities, the lowest rates for customers. So it seems like things are still in order despite that. And so I really appreciate staff digging into these annual reports because it is, you know, in absence of a rate case, it's how we can look at the companies and see how things are going and see how customers are being treated and how the rates stand. So I think it's a good practice and really helps us keep tabs on the companies in between rate cases.
Is there any further discussion? Since you're not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the Commission adopt the order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Incorporated, General Provisions Rate 100, Excess Flow Valves, Tariff, Case Number PU-17-196.
Second.
On May 18, 2017, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, filed a request for approval of revisions to its natural gas tariff that would allow it to charge for the installation of an excess flow valve, or EFV, for existing service lines. On June 29, 2017, the Commission discussed this matter with MDU and Commission staff during an informal hearing. And just, again, to provide a little bit of background, these excess flow valves would be from the distribution line, often curbside, to the meter located on the residence. This is not a requirement for residential customers themselves, but it's an option should they choose to have one installed. The starting price point is approximately $650. That would be for an installation that there's not additional concrete, or there might not be landscaping at the point of where the service line to the house ties in. So it can be $650 as a starting point. It could be higher than that. And this was caused by an incident, not in North Dakota, but where it resulted in a fatality and injuries. So at that time, PHMSA looked at the matter and issued a rule that going forward, these valves would have to be installed. But there are also service lines to residential customers that don't have the excess flow valve on, and it's an option for consumers. Really, I think it underscores when you think about what it would do if the line was struck between, call it the curb and the house, the valve would kick in and shut off the flow of gas to the meter. It would not do anything from the meter into the house, of course, but really it underscores again, though, to call before you dig and utilize the 811 number, because the majority of the time these valves will not actually have to do their job, which we would not want to see unless the line itself has been hit. So it's an option to customers. I would encourage them, if they have any questions on it, to contact their respective utility, because we have different other natural gas providers in the state, but to visit with them and determine whether or not they need one at their particular residence.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
The customers should understand, and to reemphasize the point, this is not something that attaches to your meter or where the gas comes into your house. This is something that's more curbside, where your line comes off of the main line. And so it's not a handy thing to hook up, and that's why the costs are what they are.
And the cost would obviously be at the customer's expense.
Right. Correct, at the customer's expense, and just for that individual customer. Now, these are going on new lines that are being installed, and they have actually for quite some time. I think the valve itself costs approximately $30. So when you're doing it as a part of the process, when the line is going in for the first time, it's really the $30 valve is the cost. But when it's going in after the fact, you have to excavate, you have to restore the surrounding to its original state. So the cost goes up quite a bit. But they are being installed going forward on new lines.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
All righty. I move the commission issue a notice of rescheduled hearing in EDF Renewable Development Incorporated Mericourt Wind Power Project, citing application case number PU-08-932.
Second.
This is a case that we had scheduled for hearing, I think it was the end of June. We noticed that the public notice hadn't been printed twice in the newspaper as we had requested. So we, in the abundance of caution, the company asked to reschedule the hearing so that the notice regulations could be followed to a T. So we have now rescheduled this hearing for September 13th at 10:30 a.m. at City Hall in Ashley, North Dakota. And again, this is to consider a revised site plan for the proposed 150-megawatt Mericourt Wind Power Project that the company is proposing to consist of up to 75 turbines and associated facilities within a previously designated project area and an extended area in Dickey and McIntosh counties of North Dakota.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I move the commission grant the request of Mid-America Steel Incorporated for a variance from the rail clearance standards prescribed by Section 49-10.1-13 of the North Dakota Century Code and Mid-America Steel Incorporated Rail Clearance Variance Mid-America Steel Fargo Application Case Number RR-17-260.
Second.
This is a rare, I've never seen a variance of this nature come before us before, but this is something that we have jurisdiction over. So on June 29th, the PSC received an application from Mid-American Steel for variance on the rail clearance standards prescribed in North Dakota law. Mid-America is seeking authorization to build a rail car pass-through of two overhead doors on their facility. The commission, in reviewing this, were required to notify the railroads and the unions about the clearance variance application and request comments. We notified Burlington Northern Santa Fe and the Smart Union Transportation Division about this. We received comments back from both stating no objection to the application. And our staff has reviewed this, and basically they're going to be constructing a facility with a clearance in through the doors of 16 feet. The regular clearance is 21 feet or so, but the cars that they're going to be using are flatbeds, which are much lower, only 4 feet high, and so their plans for using that height of door seems suitable, and nobody has any troubles with it. So it seems like everything is in order for approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio today, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I'll do a couple of announcements here. Some things coming up. Get back to them. Actually, today we have 4 informal hearings with Montana Dakota Utilities and Rough Rider Electric for service area agreements that Commissioner Fedorchak mentioned earlier. At 2 o'clock will be the one regarding the City of Belfield, at 2:15 the City of Hazen, at 2:30 the City of South Hart, and at 2:45 the City of Beulah. If you look further into our calendar, I just want to clarify some things. There are formal hearings scheduled for August 16, 17, and 18. And they're different, kind of similar, and now it's a little bit, now it's wrong. On August 16th in the afternoon at 1 o'clock, we have a formal hearing that shows up on the order to show cause regarding Dakota Access. Earlier in the meeting, we had a motion to continue that. So if you're looking at that calendar, that's now been continued and no date is set. But so that August 16th formal hearing is off. Then moving forward on August 17th at 8:30 a.m. is the formal hearing on an open investigation regarding Dakota Access LLC. That's case number PU-14-842. And then on Friday the 18th at 11 o'clock is another formal hearing with Northern States Power Company on a 230 kV line for in McHenry and Ward counties, a siting application. That starts at 11 a.m. It will be at the Sleep Inn in Minot. And that concludes the announcements. With that, we will take some questions. We will stand in recess. Then we'll take some questions from the press, a short break, and then reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting.
Go ahead, Blake.
Somebody's got to go first.
Julie, the briefing schedule for Dakota Access, is the final deadline still September 22nd?
No, we have in our consent agenda today, so we continued the hearing and also we continued the briefing schedule. So, and you'll also see on the admin portion that we have a scheduling of another work session on this matter. So the commission is kind of evaluating our options for moving forward, and we consulted last week with our attorneys about that, and we will be coming together again hopefully in the next week to 10 days to continue those discussions, and then after that you may see some additional dates set, but at this point it's too early to say because we haven't reached any sort of a decision. And we won't actually take any action on the next steps until we have a commission meeting.
So you anticipate it will be sometime beyond the 22nd, September 22nd?
Depending on what we decide, yes.
So it's likely to go beyond that?
Well, there's a variety of different options that we're looking at, so we might take a totally different approach. So there could be a briefing schedule. It could end up being later than that, or we could take a different angle and a different approach, in which case there may or may not be a briefing schedule.
But you don't expect any action after today, after the work session?
No, we're just scheduling a work session. We aren't actually having the work session today. We're just scheduling it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I had a question about the thresholds relating to OASIS. Brian, you mentioned that you wanted to maybe take a look at those thresholds and see if they're too high at this point. Do you know what the thresholds are? That I assume what you're talking about is, you know, level of production that triggers a siting review.
Well, in a refinery, for example, the level is 50,000 barrels per day in terms of refined refinery capacity. And so if a refinery came in at, or a proposed plant came in at 35 or 40,000, the siting requirement by the Public Service Commission would be averted in that instance. If they were to then expand down the road and move that up to 55,000 or 60,000, then they would have to come before us. But one of my concerns is that, and it's a balancing act. When you have industry proposing projects, it's not unusual to go in front of investors and not just talk about the initial project, but what is future potential. They're trying to attract capital, and it makes sense that entities would want to invest capital where growth could occur. So I understand that. But I also worry that sometimes it's a way to get around the siting process, and while I'm relatively new, you can see some black and white numbers on some of the projects in the state that are being talked about, and I think it sends a mixed message. Yeah, it gives a mixed message, and it raises the question. So, is it an issue with companies conforming and reacting to the current threshold standard, or is it an issue with where the threshold is set? So that's why I want to take, you know, personally, I can only speak for myself, but I want to take a look at whether or not we're where we need to be. Because, you know, that's a substantial project. But you're talking about a 35 or 40,000 barrel, for example, refinery. That's a substantial project. That's not just a small project that you can create in a short period of time. It takes a lot of planning, a lot of engineering, and it's a wonderful addition of infrastructure in the state if it's done right. But 50,000 just, in my opinion, seems to be high.
Go ahead. Might just also say the commission has wrestled with these types of issues on all of our siting infrastructure for years. We had these same concerns a few years back on the triggers that cause somebody to site a transmission line versus a gathering line for pipelines. And gathering systems were going in the ground, and then shortly after they were constructed, companies were coming to us for a permit to convert them to transmission lines. Well, the pipeline is in the ground, so it's kind of hard to have real meaningful discussions with the public about a line that's already in the ground. So it's anytime you set a threshold for siting or for action by a private sector company, you invite them to go under it and build below it. But so those triggers have to be carefully thought through. On the gathering system we looked at, was there better triggers? But, you know, you could maybe set a trigger on pressure, or you could set a trigger on diameter. But no matter where you set it, you're kind of maybe inviting people to go under it. So we left it the way it was. We had a lot of discussions with oil and gas and left the siting infrastructure or the siting triggers for pipelines where they were. We didn't, invite that conversation with the legislature. The wind industry was very similar. I think it started out at 50 megawatts, or it might have been 100, and then it went down to 50 and 45, and then now it's like, you know, anything above, what is it, Jerry? One? Half a megawatt has to be cited. So it is a big policy decision. It's one that we would have with the legislature because those are set in law. And it has a lot of, it really invites the question of what's the point of siting. So on a refinery, why is it under 50,000? Not an issue for siting. Over 50,000, it is. I think that it really puts a lot of trust in companies to be forthcoming with what their plans are and to do the right thing if they're going to be constructing beyond the threshold in a short order, to come in and have the public discussion with us and with members of the community so all the issues can be thought through. That's the most sensible way forward. And you know, without those kinds of conversations happening, we have to look at other tactics to make sure that the public interest is being appropriately considered.
John, it's such a good question. I'm going to weigh in on it, too, before you get to your next one. you know, over the years, of course, different types of facilities have different threshold levels. You know, the refinery at Dickinson that MDU built, that's now a Tesoro property, that was never cited because it was under the threshold. A lot of natural gas generation facilities have been built out in western North Dakota that are just barely under our siting threshold, and I don't think they're dodging it so much as it just happens to be the line that we're at 50 megawatts, I think, on that threshold. And there's sort of a state of the art. These are almost like something that you would just go and buy at the hardware store. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but they order these things in and they just set them up, and it's just a very short time, and they're 45 megawatts. That's just what they use. And, you know, one of our goals, I think, of most everybody in the state has been to reduce flaring and make use of this resource. And also with the explosion of wind generation in the state, to have something to back that up. So companies like Basin Electric, for example, have put up a lot of these natural gas generation facilities that went unsighted, and I don't think it's really a bad thing necessarily either, because it allowed them to move quickly to back up those wind farms, which go up quickly. And they are just, you know, they just bring in another one and set it right beside the other three or four they have there. So sometimes some of that is good. You know, you always hope that no companies try and take advantage of it. It's why I was really worried about this Oasis project. But like I said, I my doubts were taken care of. But had that been their goal in this particular case, the area that the expansion will go on now was the area that they used for the laydown yard on their existing plant. Now, we had, I think, a meaningful hearing on this case, dealing with a lot of the different things we deal with in siting. Just one of those things are cultural resources. Had there been some important cultural resource there that might have caused a denial of a siting application, it would have potentially been destroyed by the laydown yard of the first part that they built with the non-jurisdictional part of the plant. And so I would say it's up to the companies in the state. If ever that starts being the case, that they are clearly doing something to get on site and establish a site and then move beyond the jurisdictional line, I would imagine that the legislature and this agency are going to work together to very quickly lower those thresholds, and it will slow down industry, which is not what we necessarily want to do. But it's going to depend a lot upon companies being responsible with the flexibility they've been given by the legislature and by the Public Service Commission.
And I just want to be clear, are all the thresholds, regardless of the kind of facility, set by law?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. They're in the siting criteria. The one thing that I would add to the discussion as well is the legislature has done something interesting kind of on the other side of this, and that is for infrastructure that has been sited, they've allowed companies more flexibility to come and add to that facility. So I just was looking at a proposal from a company for increasing a capacity at a natural gas facility. So they process 110 MCF today. They want to go to 180. And all they have to do, because it's been previously sited, we've had the public hearings, we've looked at the site, they have the boundaries, it's all been cleared. All they have to do is send us a letter and say, we want to expand. And we basically acknowledge, look at, make sure they've filed the appropriate things, and they go ahead. That seems to me to be a very efficient and productive way forward. Lay out the site, do all the appropriate studies ahead of time, allow for expansion, and then allow for a shortened permitting process, or really no permitting process moving forward. So I think that, you know, the legislature and our agency has tried to be very responsive to the needs of industry to have reasonable permits, while also allowing time for public input and the appropriate public scrutiny on this infrastructure. So again, really the companies need to come forward and do the right thing when they're looking at investing in our state and establishing good working relationships from the beginning.
One last thing. Was this the first part of this project? Did this go through the siting process or no?
No, it did. It did not.
It was under the threshold?
It was under the threshold.
Okay.
Right, at 80,000 was what it went in at, 80,000. Or no, 80 million. Did I get that number?
Yeah, 80 correct? Million.
80 million. Feet. You know, and one thing I'd point.
Oh, I was going to say the threshold is 100 million CFS?
Right. Okay. Correct. You know, one thing I would point, obviously, we don't want to create onerous regulations in terms of stifling industry. We want to take a common sense approach. But at the same time, some of this is still relatively new when you look at how many new refineries have gone in across the country over the last several decades, and the answer is not many. So this is relatively new ground because of rapid natural gas production as a result of oil development in the Bakken. So we've got more, there are more things to consider than in the past, and just in terms of the volume of projects that are being proposed and being built. So it's, but the job of a regulator isn't to be a cheerleader of industry, it's to watch over industry. So while I certainly support infrastructure development, and I absolutely do, it also has to be done in the correct way. And again, it just ties back to why when I look at the threshold standards, the requirements is that, are they at the right level when it can be a several hundred million dollar or more project and yet still fall below the siting requirement? I just think that that's a tremendous amount of investment to not be taking a good look at.
And then just to clarify about the refund that MDU customers could receive, it's approximately
$5.35? $5.23. And that's an approximate number.
That's an approximate number.
Right.
Is that based on 750 kilowatt or...
You know, I asked that question, and the answer is it was the estimated amount of $418,000 in terms of overcharge divided by the number of customers, because I asked that, well, is it 750? Is it 1,000? And it's staff is very smart. They're very good about this. And the first answer was it's complicated. And then I thought, well, you know, I probably can handle it. It's complicated. So then they, but it, you know, it takes a lot of digging, and that's what it was boiled down to. So,
is it average customer? It would be safe to say that the average customer would get that. That would be the refunder.
Yeah. What,
how can they describe it?
Yeah, it's. I think it's right. You know, if you look at all of the customers, it's the midpoint. So some will get more, depending on usage, and some will get less.
So there was no truth to the rumor that you actually went to Comic-Con in San Diego?
Went to what?
Comic-Con.
No. I didn't even know that was a rumor.
I made it up right now.
I think I saw him in a superhero outfit sneaking out of the
well,
hotel.
If I were a superhero, I would have been so fast. You would not have seen me enter
and
exit.
Running in the morning with a cape.
Yeah, I did go for a couple of wonderful runs along I don't know if it was part of the bay or exactly how they define that, but
not in a cape though.
But that was not in a cape, no. But went for a couple of early morning runs. It's always a nice way to start the day.
That was we left the day before it started. Our events concluded, and the city was filling up. And I didn't see a single costume though, so I was kind of bummed.
Bo, you had a question outside of the comedian stuff.
in addition to the MDU requested a natural gas rate increase last Friday, and I was wondering if you could explain the timeline and process for that.
Well, it was, as you say, it was requested on Friday with the hearings the past several weeks and being gone Monday and Tuesday, you know, just total disclosure and honesty, I'm going to be working with staff, as I'm sure we all commissioners will have similar questions, but I would be more comfortable taking a look at it first, because I'm just haven't, to be honest, gotten to it yet. So
these take quite a while, both for staff to process. We got to make sure all the information is complete and such as that before we would even get to scheduling public comment meetings or the actual hearing.
But if you could give me a day or two, I can get back to you and answer some general questions, I'm sure. Okay, thanks.
Anything else? Blake, John, Dave? Okay, we will reconvene at 11:30.